Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Hi, this is Tony Dennison, and you're listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson Law Author guest Barry Livingston. Barry's book, The Importance of Being an Ernie, is the story of his life and career before, during, and after My Three Sons. And is filled with great stories not only about My Three Sons, but about Barry's encounters with the likes of Myrna Loy, Carl Malden, John Cassavetes, Elvis Presley, Robert Downey Jr., Lucille Ball, David Jansen, Forest Whitaker, and Adam Sandler. You can find The Importance of Being Ernie in bookstores everywhere, as well as Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and The Importance of Being Ernie. .com. Barry, a few years ago, I worked on a memoir about a young man's addiction to cocaine. So I understand a little bit about drug addiction and bottoming out. As you talk about in The Importance of Being Ernie, you had a problem yourself, and you're very straightforward about it. What was bottoming out for you?
Well, yeah, there was a lot of things happening in my life at that time, actually. I mean, personal things in addition to my career. Just being confused. I didn't know whether it was gone completely, whether it was, if I should continue to pursue a career in show business, should I just go back to school? The disillusionment of feeling like people that you thought were your friends no longer return your phone calls. Mm-hmm. You just can't even sometimes get on a studio lot anymore. Those are mind games and head trips that you have to wrap your head around, and it could be obviously a little depressing. And the era that I grew up in, was the 70s. And the 70s in Hollywood, just quite frankly, were rife with drugs. I mean, and you could soft soap that now and look back on it and go, it wasn't everywhere. Well, in the circles that I ran in, and I was certainly aspiring to be part of the current trend and hip group of actors that were coming up, the Jack Nicholsons and the Warren Beattys and the Dustin Hoffmans, that was, synonymous with the 60s and the whole new culture that was kind of taking over film, the Dennis Hoppers. So I wanted to be part of that scene. Rightly or wrongly, hey, whatever, that scene was pretty much fueled by a lot of drugs. And, so whatever, you make a mistake or not, you jump into that, and that's where things are happening. Personally, eventually, it didn't take me too long to figure out personally it wasn't working for me. I just didn't feel good. I just didn't feel good in the mornings.
Yeah.
So that, fortunately for me, recognized that warning sign and went, you know what? I think I'm going to stop smoking cigarettes, and I think I'm going to put down the cocaine straw and stop smoking weed and see what happens. What's the line of you keep repeating, doing the same things and expecting different results?
Yeah.
So, I kind of realized I'm going to try to do something different. Maybe the results will be better. That time, too, my mother was very, very ill. In fact, she passed away
Kind
of at the end of the 70s, which is when I was probably at my lowest point in terms of grappling with all the forces in my life that seemed to be pulling me down. So that didn't, that obviously wasn't helping me either to feel good about life and my future. So, yeah, it all kind of came to a head around the time she passed away, which was 79.
Yeah.
And around that time, it just, not long before that, maybe not long after that, I can't recall. It was in that time. So I went, I'm making a change here. Plain and simple, too. I thought, hey, if I keep on this road, I'm going to lose my house.
Yeah.
I mean, because it eats up a hell of a lot of money. and, you know, still making pretty decent bucks from residuals, because the show was in, my three sons was in syndication mm-hmm. at that point. So, you know, I was still looking at it from a practical standpoint of going, yeah, I got to, you know, lower my expenses here. And what can I cut out? Well, yeah, I think I can cut out that $200 a week cocaine habit.
Yeah.
That might help. So that's the decisions that I made. And, yeah, I'm really trying to document all that in my book, you know, because I think it's helpful for people who are maybe have those kind of influences that are dragging their life down or pushing it into areas that are not healthy. So, you know, you have to make a stand. You have to make a decision and hopefully you get better results from it. And more often than not, you will.
Barry's book being The Importance of Being Ernie, The Importance of Being Ernie, which you can find in bookstores everywhere, as well as Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and wherever books are sold online. This is apropos of nothing, Barry, but let me ask the question anyway. Down the line, you had an opportunity to work with both Charlie Sheen and Robert Downey Jr. Did your experience with addiction make you sympathetic to what they were going through?
Well, I didn't discuss any of that with them personally,
mm-hmm.
But I certainly respect the fact that, like, Downey really put his life back in order, and, you know, and again, he had a very high profile, much more high. See, my era of drug addiction and all that went completely under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about it now, but nobody was following me around with a camera, or, you know, everyone today has a phone with a camera in it. You know, you can't escape. But Downey really, you know, again, he went to jail too, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he had some pretty serious things that pushed him, you know, pretty hard to get his life clean and straight. Robert was funny. I did a film with him called Zodiac with David Fincher. Actually, I did The Social Network, an Academy Award-winning film with David Fincher as
mm-hmm.
well, after Zodiac. But when we were doing Zodiac, and I said to Robert, we were working on this big, at this old U.S. post office annex. It's abandoned down in L.A., but they had built a gigantic set for the San Francisco Chronicle,
mm-hmm.
The newspaper. But you couldn't get to the bathroom. If you left the set to go to the bathroom, you'd be back in a half an hour. It was the slowest elevator ever made. It seemed like a half a mile away. So to save money and not hold up production, you literally have to get a can and go in the back of the set and find some dark corner and take a leak. And so at the end of the day, you know, Robert would come out and he'd have his U-band can in his hand, and he'd, you know, jokingly would make this big announcement, please, you know, I'm letting everyone and anyone and everyone know there isn't coffee grounds in this can, you know, and open at your own risk. And I went up to it and said, hey, Robert, I said, you know, I think, you know, that can there, you might be able to sell that on eBay, you know, crazy things they're selling, you know, sell there. And he said, no, you know, wouldn't make a dime on it. Totally clean. So good for him. He was straight and clean and another guy who has such terrific talent.
Good for him and good for you. Zodiac was not your first experience working in San Francisco, Barry. You know, many, many years prior to that, you did an episode of Streets in San Francisco, which was memorable for two reasons. One, you had a chance to meet and learn from Carl Malden, and two, you learned how to drive a stick shift.
Well, yeah, on the fly, I told the producers when I got cast in the role, I knew they were shooting San Francisco. I knew what the streets, you know, they're these drop-offs that look like you're going off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew in the script it said I'm driving an old 1950s pickup truck. Well, you know, I thought, I don't recall too many of those with automatic transmissions. So I told them, I said, look, please, when I get up there, make sure if you want me to be driving an old truck in this show, in this episode, you know, it better be an automatic because I don't know how to drive a stick. And they said, oh, don't worry. Yeah, sure. So, you know, of course, I get up there, fly up, arrive on the set, and I look at this truck that looks like it was put together by committee, a drunken committee. You know, every panel on the truck was a different color. The insides, you can see, were like all hanging down. So I went, oh, boy, that doesn't look like an automatic transmission truck. And sure enough, I went over and looked in, and three pedals, you know, accelerator, brake, and clutch, and I was like, oh, geez. So then they go, okay, you know, we got to do the scene where you're driving down this hill, and I'm going, hey, guess what? I don't know how to drive a stick. I told them, and they're going, oh, no, well, we better get a stunt guy to, like, teach you real quick. And anybody who learned how to, you know, drive a stick shift will remember you don't learn really quickly. You don't learn on the first, you know, you got to do it. You got to get
practice
in it. but there was no time for that. So they stuck me in the truck after about, you know, sitting with a prop guy for about, I mean, a stunt man for about a half an hour trying to work me through the column shifter and the pedals. And I thought, oh, crap, you know, this is it. So, they, you know, no mercy, you know, clock's ticking. I'm up at the top of the hill sitting in this truck going, here we go. Put it in gear, gave it a little gas. Thank God the thing didn't stall like it usually does when you depress, you know, release the clutch. And, man, I went down that hill like it was a Coney Island roller coaster. And I just went, forget it. I'm not downshifting. I'm putting the clutch, the pedal to the floor and just coasting down on the brake. Of course, it was an old truck, and the brakes failed. And I hit the bottom of that hill, I don't know, going 40, 50 miles an hour. I don't know what I was doing. And the thing felt like it was going to fly apart. It was shaking so much. And I just shot right through traffic. I mean, I went through a red light. Amazingly, didn't take anybody out. Started to go up another hill, which I realized it's the only time I'm going to be able to stop now because I got gravity working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I could, I kind of turned the car to, you know, parallel, and, you know, and I was just praying. I was going, God, if I have to do that again, I hope they got that shot, which they did, thank God. But, yeah, it's just crazy stuff that happens on a film sometimes.
And thank God that you came out of it okay. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you tonight.
Yep.
Barry, this has been a lot of fun. I hope you'll join us one of these nights again on TV Confidential.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or @TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.